Da-da-da-da-da-da. I beat you to it.
We're back on the bus. No commercials. You got the bus driver.
You got Daniel.
Hit it. Cue the music. We're going in.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Dude, this weather is shit today. Shitty storm clouds. And the thing is, though, when you look out, this place is New Venice. This is the place they're going to look back in 1,000 years, like 500 years, how we look at Venice, like in Italy, like, wow. Good job, humans. This is something pretty impressive, pretty pristine. Something to feel good about. Not when you watch the election and you're like, oh my God, damn it. This is it? This is the best we got? But at the same time, you want to say, like, wow. Look over the history of humankind. Look at the amount of kind of leaders we had. All right, we had some savage, gross, disgusting people who were willing to kill 100 million people, or close to it. Like Genghis Khan, for example. He had to kill 50 to 75 million people. And he was able to bring in a lot of different factions from all over Asia and certain parts of Europe. I think he even stretched one of his campaigns all the way down into Egypt. But to bring all those people together and unite them with a strong ruler of fist, he killed 50 to 75 million people. I mean, that whole...
The number's that big?
50 to 75 million, they want to say.
Savage.
Savage.
They should replace the word savage with, you got Genghis Khan.
Genghis, just Genghis.
Genghis.
Just the idea was proposed in Dan Carlin's Hardcore History on his big 5-6-part series, The Wrath of the Khans, that... What they used to do was make an example of a city. So it's like, okay, what's the next biggest city in this next territory or empire that we want to go and attack or take over? Okay, it's a Persian Empire, and Baghdad is like the biggest city.
So they would just go after what?
The biggest city. And
biggest, baddest city.
Killed every single person.
So Miami would go, okay, New York City, we're coming after you.
Yeah, 8-9 million people. We need to go make an example of that city, kill everybody. And then after we killed everybody, we left. We'd be waiting right outside the town, and people would come back, and they'd start trying to bury people. We're going to kill all those people, too, as well. And just pile of bones on top of each other, on top of each other, all around. Just smoldering dead bodies and blood, hair. I think there was one report from some Arab chronicler from the 13th century talking about... Oh, shit. That's what happens. They just disappear.
That's what happened to history, right? You didn't write it down in the books. It's not there anymore.
You can't even eat enough fat, enough beta-hydroxybutyrate jet fuel to get your brain flowing and mowing. You're going to forget some things. Not even the best working fine-tuned brains are going to be working that well. What can you do?
Right. We're on the mission for living forever, and we still got a long way to go.
But look at this. We have both bus drivers. Now, not only a bus only has one driver, but we got two bus drivers back on the bus, both hosts on the episode. Where have you been, man? It's been a while since you've been on here. Let the people know where you've been.
Well, I own the bus. So when you own the bus, sometimes you're not on the bus.
He's literally saved in my phone, bus owner.
And he's saved in my phone, bus driver. So it works out well. That's the original relationship with us got started off, right? We were traveling out to EDC Las Vegas as a group with a bunch of friends that were connected with each other.
I just met you a week before, shopping for festival outfits.
Shopping for festival outfits.
That brings people together.
Thrift stores, if you need to know. There's nothing like a good trench coat down to the knees with feathers floating out of the sides.
Very bohemian.
Yeah, you can be Bedouin, bohemian. You can be your mother on Tuesdays when she's dressed as a man.
What's another B? We got bohemian. We got, what's the other one? Bedouin.
Bohemian, Bedouin.
Bavarian.
Bavarian. That's a little too German for me.
I'm saying very German right now. It's another B. Brazilian, that's too...
Not a long brain dead.
Brazilian's not abstract enough. Bratislavan.
And now we're heading in the country, the direction of countries. Right
I'm
now.
Saying very, very European. I'm saying very far right now.
Well, we could stop off at a brothel, and we could...
there you go.
These are all still European, or at least they're Game of Thrones.
Baghdadi.
Baghdadi. Bring your keffiyeh.
Ooh, yeah. Sorry about kaffirs, dude.
So a kaffiyeh is, it's kind of the Arab scarf, but for the men. It goes around. You see often soldiers wearing, or they have the little floaty, I guess you'd call it feathers, down at the bottom of the scarf.
If a lot of people who know Yasser Arafat, one of the old leaders of the PLO, the Palestinian Authority, he made that certain black and white checkered one very famous, because he'd always wear it with his a ring that would hold it in place. But anyways, I was in Jerusalem recently, and I'm leaving the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. I probably told this story in the podcast already, but I'm going to get it again. And some man walked up. He was trying to sell me a kefir, and he put it on my head. He wrapped it around with the black ring over it. It's like, oh, man, this looks pretty badass. This thing's going to last me a while. You look at some things, you're like, wow, this is going to stay with me. I don't buy much shit. I'm trying to lower the amount of materials I have in my life, go very minimal. But this, I can use this for a lot of
this
things.
This is going to make it.
This is going to go a long way. This is like a five-year investment.
I'm lost in the desert. I can carry whatever food I can find in this sack.
Like with that red jacket I got. That red jacket's like a 10-year investment right there. That's a $20 red jacket. It's going a long
way.
The Chilean miner jacket. You see that. You see like, wow, this. I'm going to see Brandon in like 20 years with that jacket. See, I just put it up 10 more years. It's a very durable jacket. But anyways. Now, I had lived in the Middle East, I lived in Kuwait, I've traveled all over, and I understood that there's, you know, certain colors that your headscarf, depending on what country you're in or what tribe you're from, they have a different headscarf color to represent where they're from or who they are. I did not realize that the one I was rocking was a Hamas headscarf. And I'm walking all around.
Well, let me stop you for a second. You didn't realize that, but yet you lived in Kuwait for 2+ years.
But Kuwait's not Palestine, man. And even, it's not even Palestine. I mean,
sympathetic.
Palestine is the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. But, I mean, the Gaza Strip is the area that Hamas currently is reigning over and has control over. So, I wasn't even in the Gaza Strip. You know, I'm in the West Bank. And I'm walking around. I try to get all the way up to the Dome of the Rock. I don't get there that day. But I'm heading back to my hotel. And it's Shabbat, so a lot of families are out, they're walking around, and I got families changing sides on me. I mean, I had a pretty good tan, I got a pretty good beard out there, I got these sunglasses on.
People don't change sidewalks on you. No, they join your sidewalk. That's what you're saying.
I look like an Arab prince, and I just got Jewish families throwing up the universal sign for peace, you know, the two fingers, like, peace? Peace? And I'm like, shalom, dude. What's going on? How's it going? I'm feeling great. I just got to walk around Jerusalem, this crazy historical city with so many different ideas, conflicting ideologies. And these people are freaked out by me. And I'm just like, I couldn't put two and two together. And they're changing sidewalks. People are just giving me stares because I'm in a predominantly Jewish area now. And I didn't realize, or I wasn't even told until I went back to Jerusalem after the Birthright trip. And the lady I got in the taxi cab with, she's like, listen, she was really a cool lady. She's like, I don't want to tell you what you can believe in or you shouldn't believe in. Because she was like somewhat Orthodox. But she was like, you know what your headscarf is, right? I'm like, it's a scarf, you know? It looks pretty badass, right? Look at this, I can wrap it around my neck. She's like, listen, like, see how it has some intricate spiderweb ones on there? It's usually one for the PLO, but with the intricate little spiderwebs, that's a Hamas headscarf. And I'm just like,
you made a list.
Jesus Christ.
You've been listed by the government.
I've been listed by a lot of governments. When I even got back from Kuwait my first time, and I'm coming back with like 5 suitcases, and one of them was like a pipe bomb looking bag, like a long duffel bag that their police and counterterrorism units are trained to look for, these long stretch bags. And I think there was a bombing in Turkey, like at the airport.
Oh, yeah.
As I was on the plane flying back. And I think I had a pretty out there beard, pretty thick, and a tan, scruffed up hair, and I'm getting off this flight, and some
is that a microaggression?
It was a big microaggression, dude. I was targeted, I was profiled. He comes over to me, where are you coming from? And I'm like, Germany? And he's like,
wrong.
You sure? Because I could connect in Germany, but I didn't want to say Kuwait. I didn't say I came from Kuwait before. I was like, anywhere else? And I'm like, Kuwait? He's like, all right, come over here with me. Went through all my bags. And I had some pretty out there stuff. I had some tea I repackaged. So he just kept going through my bag. And he'd pull it out. And he's like, what is this? And I'm like, That's tea, dude. That's tea. It's not bud. It's not weed. If anything, I wouldn't be a terrorist. Or I wouldn't be an extremist bringing over.
You give me the sympathetic basketball story. I'm a basketball coach. I played. Come on, give me a break.
Yeah. I did overtime, and I also threw him. I didn't say trolling, but just threw him a loop that comes out of his backward comments. Because then he's going through, and I got protein powder, and he's like, "What is this?" And it's like. Dude, again, why would I be a terrorist, someone who hates drugs, who hates sex, and I'm bringing back chocolate cocaine from the Middle East? Where's your reason, dude? Where are you coming from? And then we're talking. He's like, listen, I wouldn't even go over there right now because all the people, they're fucking nuts and they're fucking insane. It's just not a good time to go over there right now. I'm like, oh, have you been over there? He's like, no. Do you know a bunch of people from over there? Like, have you met anybody? No. So you're really... You know a lot more about the region than I do, apparently, right? You really know that you can say that about all those people over there. He's like, well, it doesn't work like that, all right? I just know he's backtracking, backstepping on just, I wouldn't even say it's being tolerant. It's just like, it's a place that I don't even know or understand. Living there 2 years, visiting, you know, a place like Israel, visiting a place like Kuwait, Dubai, UAE, Bahrain, Qatar, and it's like, I have no idea what's the reason some of these people could think or feel this way, and whether it's I'm not in their shoes or, you know, I have my own battles with modernity I have to face and I have to go over, and I got a little more battles with modernity that they have to go over and fight with, and it's on us to try and bring them in with the rest of the world, say, hey, listen, if you want to be the rest, part of the rest of the world and do the things that the rest of the world wants to do, like, we have a kind of a code, a kind of a small set of rules that we all try to abide by. Listen, that's my woman. Don't touch my bike, you know? Don't jump off clitori. Yeah, we got a few of those things.
What was my last one?
Clitori.
Okay, this just...
Was that proper?
I was confirming for my own self that I heard the word that I heard.
Female genital mutilation, dude. But at the same time, you could say the rest of the world practices male genital mutilation with... chopping off the foreskin of a penis.
And if you check out our first podcast with Dr. Money P, you could get some good insight into that.
God damn it. Dude, we're never going to sell these mugs.
I think that these things are a hit.
For anyone who wants to know or can't see what we're drinking now, we're drinking out of one of those Yeti mugs. It's really impressive. What is it? It stays hot for 6 hours. Stays cold for 12, or is it vice versa?
Yeah, I think they actually just invented a double. So the insulation is now going to be 24 hours, 12. They're doubling the time. Love the way the world innovates at such a high rate.
At the same time, we get that innovation. I would say that's another innovation from war. I mean, if anything,
the steel.
What other? I mean, the military. You know, certain research and development. And certain different technologies and discoveries, they all come from a certain area.
Well, war has huge benefits, right? Most of it, I would say, from my perspective, it comes from stimulating growth and stimulating innovation. So we have such progression in a lot of technology, war technologies, even useful technology on an everyday basis, comes from... What happened in the 1940s with World War One? Didn't that's World War One,
yeah. With the amount of innovation with tanks, and just breaking down the usual ways that we fought war. You know, it's usually there hasn't been a really big war in 100 years with the battles of Napoleon. Now, you know, at the beginning of the war, you have horses, you have people lining up in battle ranks, and all of a sudden you have these huge artillery shells, these huge machine guns, you have tanks now, you have people like saying we have to win this war.
It stimulates nationalism at home too. I mean, people want, okay, for our country, I'm willing to work harder. My husband, brother, sister are over at war. Now it's time for me to do my part over here, work at the steel factory, coal factory, whatever it might be, and put in my time and effort.
Yeah, but isn't that something that we just need to get over as humans? And maybe if we had an alien or another planet or people to fight against, and we could actually pull together and say, like, okay, we're all going to fight together and pull all resources and stop bickering little stupid things, because now we're earthling. We're part of Earth. And like you said, sometimes having war, it stimulates so much different innovation nationalism and people giving people a purpose in order to go do something in a life that they wouldn't have a purpose.
Okay, so let's say hypothetically that we find another species in outer space. We have the technology to travel there back and forth rapidly. So we find the species, and what would be our purpose? So from the first thing that I think from my perspective is, well, resources, right? What reason did Columbus and Portugal start searching, the Dutch East India Company, what reason did they start going to find, they wanted the spice trade, right? They wanted colonialism, they wanted new lands, they wanted to grow things.
And crazy how much like cinnamon cost. Like in the year 1521, cinnamon was like the number one like commodity in like
price-wise. Such inelastic prices too, I mean.
Because there's spice islands in Southeast Asia where you can only find at the time, like, or there was only grown there, cinnamon, a bunch of other things, and it was like literally the most expensive thing on the planet at that time.
So resources were the driving force behind, you know, a lot of these countries funding these explorers. So for us, let's say that's the driving force behind getting to outer space. Right now it's not. Right now we have Musk and all these people creating a space race for almost for humanity, or to create potentially a sort of consumer reason for going to outer space, like traveling,
tourism,
and seeing
yeah.
tourism, or let's build on another planet, etc. But the real driving force for us to go, in my perspective, would be resources. So let's say we find this other planet, right? Back to the original planet. We find another planet, we find another species. Okay, we join together as human beings to come together as a species and say, you know what, let's battle this other planet. Aren't we doing the same thing that isn't that doing the same thing that Columbus did, or that Portugal did when they found South America and the Mesoamericans? It's the same concept. When we find them, wouldn't it be kind of hypocritical to think that, okay, we're going to battle them so we can be a species here, but eventually we're all going to be in the same galaxy, so we might be one galaxy battering another. We're Galaxians or Universalians if we're from the universe. Where's the universe of peace, man?
I hope the Milky Way galaxy beats the Andromeda, but at the same time,
what is it, a
million years or like 3 million years? The Andromeda galaxy and the Milky Way are supposed to converge and combine.
So I'd like to see that.
Then we become one. So, but I mean, at the same time, if those things are converging, how much like planets are just going to be like colliding into each other?
I'm not sure that that's how it works.
You have two galaxies that are going to converge
at what
as
rate? Yeah, you'd need to know the rate that they converge at.
At the same time, there's too many particles and there's too many objects within each galaxy that there's going to be some collisions, dude. There's going to be a lot of asteroid fields. I hope Han Solo doesn't come out of hyperspace in there, or else he's not even him can SC-3PO. The odds of successfully maneuvering through an asteroid field is like, what, 3,700,000 to 1? Something Nick Augustino would still bet on.
Yeah, but those are still odds that I'd be willing to take for survival.
If we have Han Solo navigating, but I mean, you're not always going to have Han Solo.
Well, you might have Chewbacca. That's part of the your odds are at least 10,000,000 to 1 there.
In a different universe.
Different time.
Different space. I watched this documentary the other day. I was watching about string theory and trying to understand like how, and I'd watched something about it before. So anyway, string theory is the idea that there's a bunch of universes. There's an infinite amount of universes, multiverses. And each time there is something along the lines of a Big Bang or an explosion that is triggering a whole other universe into existence. And there's a bunch of universes, like little bubbles all around, and they're all bouncing around. But at some point in one time, these universes could combine and collide together. And within each of these universes is an infinite amount of possibility and probability of actions that you would take from any single moment.
So the multiverse theory.
It is a multiverse. It is one of a multiverse.
I think the multiverse theory is a deviation from the string theory, but I'm not quite sure on that.
Let's ask young Jamie on the fact. Multiverse.
Well, I do.
Versus string theory.
I would consider myself a time travel, infatuated by time travel. And I think the multiverse theory goes a little something like, there's infinite potential universes over infinite time. Where it is interesting for time travel is, and the way that I understand and interpret it is, if you travel back in time, so let's say you create a time travel device, right? You could travel back in time. It's possible. But you would never know in the future that you traveled back in time, because when you travel back in time, you would be approaching a different of the infinite timelines. So I could travel back in time, and let's say that I go back 10 minutes from 20 minutes from now, and we don't start this conversation, right? Well, in this timeline where we are at right here and now, we would still continue on having this conversation, or actually I would be disappeared and you'd never know, and I would disappear from existence. So in one timeline, time travel would exist, but I'd go back, and then since I went back in time, it would converge, or it would diverge, excuse me, and I would split off. So me living going back in time would be me only existing in one of those infinite universes. So the chances of you ever getting to understand that is zero. I would just happen to live in a universe where I went back in time and time traveled. So the future would never know that someone time traveled if they went back. And in the past, you could only reflect a new timeline, which is one of infinite possibilities anyway. It's so microscopically small. In fact, it's completely negligible. It doesn't even factor into a percentage that you could even calculate. And
what about wormholes? And what if you traveled through the wormhole? If you had literally the piece of paper experiment, where you took the piece of paper and you have one circle over here and one circle on the other side of the paper, but if you fold them in half, instead of traveling all the way around that piece of paper, you can literally go through this little section of the paper and bam, you're on the other side of the universe. But let's say that part of the universe is another part of the universe where another infinite amount of probabilities and possibilities that there's a you exist.
I think we need an astrophysicist on the show.
You know one?
I don't. Not yet. If you're an astrophysicist and you're out there listening.
Well, good news. When we go to Chile, I know an astrophysicist in Chile. I hung out with him and we were stargazing at one of his, he has a little tour. He moved from Belgium, owns a big plot of land in at San Pedro de Atacama. It's one of the best places in the world to stargaze because of its high altitude. 2,500 meters,
but
being a dry plateau desert, so good, clear, dry air, and being at a high altitude, one of the best places to see the stars, the moon, and we just sat out there talking about astrophysics, like, for a good, like, till 2 in the morning, from 9 to 2, we were just shooting the shit, and the two of the bridges I was with, we were like, bro, how do you know all this stuff? We're talking about the Doppler effect, and he was, like, showing us one part of the sky. This was probably the craziest thing. And he was measuring and measuring, okay, this spot, I know where it is in this part of the sky right now. And theoretically, because black holes are still theoretical, they're not technically proven to exist.
We haven't been inside one,
but we theorize that they're in the center of our galaxy, or center of each galaxy is not just a massive star, but they need a massive black hole in order to counteract that. The yin and yang to life.
Yeah, I saw the most interesting theory of black holes, and it was that what is on the other side could potentially be the start of a new universe. It sucked in so much matter and energy that when you hit the other side, it expands into another universe. So all the infinite black holes are creating other universes that are creating more universes.
That's like, it sounds like something in the string theory.
Yeah,
I think there's constantly different, every explosion of life is an explosion for, not like an explosion like a bomb exploding, but it has the amount of energy to explode into a big bang or to another universe.
We are the product of one of those. And the science naysayers.
Simply stunning. But back to this, description of this black hole, he was showing there's a bunch of clump of stars just all pooled together in the sky. I mean, you couldn't see it with a naked eye, but with a really high-powered telescope, and it was just like, oh my god, you just see such a collapse of stars in one part of space. And he's like, this is technically or theoretically where a black hole is in outer space right here. And you're just like, you can't notice that without a telescope, but seeing that, you're just like trying to wrap your head around, like, and plug it together, all the whys and hows, and like, but like they're all molded in, like about to fall into each other. I mean, you can't see that normally. It was such a speechless moment. It had nothing to put words to describe. It's like, ah, fuck, holy shit. That just the ender, end of everything in our universe, in our existence, and it's just right there, and I can see it. But it's thousands and hundreds of light years away that I'm never gonna, maybe never, hopefully never experience. Hopefully a super massive black hole or with the Hadron Collider.
I wouldn't mind to experience a black hole if that's my last experience.
It'll last forever, apparently, wouldn't it? Because, like, doesn't time slow down once you get closer inside?
Time approaches infinity as you approach it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're floating around in there forever.
Maybe I do want to be in a black hole. Forget friends. All I need is matter.
Don't go in alone.
Diamond space.
I mean,
don't go in alone.
Yeah.
Good move.
Then you get pulled apart like spaghetti, but, I mean, there goes your keto. If you get pulled apart like spaghetti inside a black hole, what would you say your body's consist of and made of? Would that be a carbohydrate? Or we're mostly made of protein.
It might break me down into the different parts, and then, you know, they can feed the fat off my body to someone else who's in keto.
Now, if an animal, we know, because we know what kind of animals that we like to eat that are most beneficial for fat, protein, and there's not going to be any carbs, not much carbs in animals, I'd say. Sugar?
I don't know what they're, I don't know what
no.
content
so,
is.
I mean,
glycogen, glucose.
Yeah, but if we're talking, let's say, like a piece of salmon, probably one of the more nutrient-dense based kind of food sources in the wild, would you say?
Yes.
Salmon, maybe venison.
My brother would be an expert on salmon.
Yeah, so that's made of heavy protein, heavy fat. Now, what are we made of? Where would we rank inside the animal kingdom as far as a good nutrient-dense based like snack for different animals?
Well, I bet different parts of our body have different nutrient content. So your liver might potentially be extremely healthy, whereas your rib cage might not offer much.
No, I wouldn't get much ribs on me.
No.
No, it would be definitely a grass-fed. Grass-fed quality.
Definitely, that's true. Yeah, I'd be expensive in the stores.
I wouldn't be a marbled corn or grain-fed ribeye, just with heavy fat along the rims. But it's so good. Cook it some grass-fed butter, onions, and mushrooms. I'd add a lot of zucchini, actually, when I'm cooking my sautéing my onions and mushrooms with steak.
I would 100% like. Okay, you're stuck on a deserted island, and you've got four people, and you're not sure how long. I'm gonna kill the fat guy pretty quickly. Like, I need the fat in my body. I want to operate properly. I mean, I don't know what the moral dilemma is on that. I'm gonna definitely take him out quickly.
That's the thing. I think it's gonna depend where you are, because depending on where you are, say you're in a spice island, and you have a certain amount of spices, whether it's salt, cinnamon, all these things that can help preserve all these different, fat or protein or different meat from a human being that you're going to need to last for a while. I mean, granted, they could be the fat person or the skinny person. You need to preserve that meat because you can't eat it all in one sitting in one portion. So I don't think it matters actually on the size of the person. Because maybe you want that fat person now because that fat person actually has a lot more fat stores on them that we can say, hey, listen, you can actually be in ketosis and you can fast. You don't need to eat for 2 months. So we can have you eat less food, and we can kill somebody skinnier because we don't need that much food as well.
He's not going to be able to make it. He's going to have to go through the carb flu, which is 21 days. He's not going to be able to get into ketosis.
The island's voted, dude.
I vote. Okay, so the vote, so we're 1-1. You vote keep him alive, and I'm voting eat him.
What do you think he's going to vote for?
He's too slow to get away.
So that's an interesting dilemma we just got thrown into right there. Ketosis?
Yeah, moral dilemmas involving the body are quite interesting.
I mean, it has to do, that book Grain Brain I just read by Dr. David Perlmutter. Simply fascinating. I mean, I also have watched a documentary. It was about pharmaceuticals and just knowing how much pharmaceuticals. I mean, it's a money-making system, but how one pill and you repressing cholesterol, for example, or saturated or high cholesterol and eating a low saturated fat diet, because we want to reduce your cholesterol in your body. And okay. Pfizer makes the number one selling pharmaceutical for that. It's called Lipitor. But through the studies and research we found, cholesterol is needed to produce testosterone in men and women. But also, you need to make proestrogen for women and estrogen, and you need cholesterol for that. But we have everybody eating a low saturated fat, low cholesterol diet, so we're repressing all that. At the same time, Pfizer's second most profitable pharmaceutical is Viagra. So they're repressing your cholesterol levels, you're making testosterone, and they're also going to sell you something that's going to boost your sex level, make you want to have sex more. It's like, oh man, it's a scam.
It really is.
It's a money-making system. And then another interesting fact is...
So they're selling one side to prevent you, and then they also selling the other side to bring it back. That sounds like, I mean, from a business perspective...
It's great, but when I look at this stuff, I don't act surprised. I see like, okay, that's something a human being would do.
It's like selling cigarettes, knowing you're getting lung cancer, and then also selling the lung cancer treatment, knowing you're going to make them better.
I mean, that's just how we have our economy, and that's how we have our capitalism, and that's how capitalism works.
The marketing's so good that you don't realize that the cigarettes, or, you know, you don't realize what's happening. So, in your perspective, the cholesterol, the marketing's so good that people think these things are bad for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the marketing's so good that they think the other side is good for them, taking the pill.
Well, you've had, like, the Food and Drug Administration, you've had the CDC, and then you have people developing these food pyramids and making grain and carbohydrates, any complex carbohydrate, at the bottom of the pyramid.
That food pyramid.
So you need 6 to 11
That's
servings.
That's the guy we should be brandishing and throwing out of the community.
The grain and sugar industry, man. Like,
who made that triangle?
Grain and sugar.
You flip it. Here's the rules. Flip it around.
Flip it around. But South Park did a whole spoof on that the other day. They flipped the food pyramid upside down. That was one they did last season. Flipped the pyramid.
That's
Cartman
true.
Having a vision with Aunt Jemima.
Unbelievable.
They're good.
Matt and Trey are the smartest people in the world.
Have you watched any of the season?
First two episodes.
I watched two more. Hilarious.
I don't want to know what happens in episodes 3 and 4, but give everyone a breakdown of 1 and 2 or the overarching theme.
It's about trolling, and it really is playing into the dilemma that's had with Milo Yiannopoulos.
Wait, let me tell the people, we are talk about trolling. Like, we are trolls in ourselves.
If you gotta ask, dude, I mean.
Then I can afford it, but everyone else can't.
I try and stick to the rules, dude. Rule 63 is a rule I live my life by. The first 61 rules, the first 62, it's a whole other story. But I mean, rule 44, don't ever be high in the courtroom.
Is there a level you would say that trolling takes you too far? Like, a genuine question. Like, is there a so you could do a simple troll, like,
I hope everybody noticed that I got him in checking himself and questioning himself.
Of course
himself.
He did. Yeah, see, that's a micro troll.
It's a micro troll.
So you could do something simple. Like, some people view trolling as, oh, you go on Facebook and you make, like, an obvious comment, like, oh, Susie, you look fat. I think a less obvious but a small troll would be something along the lines of, like, complimenting them on some silly post and, like, going along with what they're saying, even though you find it to be completely outlandish and rhetorical and pointless for them to post it in the first place. But you would say, oh, Susie, that's a great post, and here's why. Even though you just want her to comment more so that she goes down the rabbit hole of silly, stupid things she's saying on her Facebook wall that have nothing to do with anything that is relevant in society and just reflection of her own personal opinions.
It's having an overabundance and excess of time. Like you said, you just went into a whole scenario of how you were going to deviously trick and misconceive somebody to think one certain way or deceive them that you're on their side.
A lot of chicanery going on.
Way too much time. It's like going on to I'll give you an example, a Trump supporter or even a Hillary supporter. You could do, obviously, troll either one, because if you're really that committed to one person in this party, next question.
Either side, the far left or the far right, is going to be the easiest to troll because they're so committed, so vehement in their beliefs that they are going to fall for whatever trick you put them
through. Whatever. Like, I can go on my dad's Facebook, and he'll throw some ridiculous pro-Trump, anti-Hillary thing. And I love going on there because I can just whip up some stuff, and they'll be talking about this, and we can't have Muslims. And I'm like, yeah, we gotta get those dirty brown people out of our country. And people will be like the comment, like, yeah, we gotta get those brown people out of here.
And that's like, a troll, yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know if I can keep going with this one. I don't know how far I can go. There are these people that are actually gonna realize, like, oh shit, like they're that committed to it. Or just with, like, Hillary, and you start talking about microaggressions. Like, yeah, I hate men. Like, men, and you're a guy, and you're talking, like, I hate men. They think they just have so much privilege, and they just don't understand, like, how many people are repressed and put down in today's day and age. And, like, there's so many less of them going to college. And they're like, yeah, we need less of them going to college, though. There's not enough place for women. It's like, okay, I got her. She bit on the bait. Now she's talking about how women who actually do have more of a go to more higher attendance in American universities now. But I've got her going. Like, oh yeah, men, they don't deserve to be here anymore. There's no poor place for them. They've been in this place. This is somebody, of course, you're looking at it from a grander scheme, who might have been put down before, and now never had this big of a soapbox or a podium to stand on to vocalize or project their voice out into the world. And now they also have something like the internet. Because I was talking with somebody yesterday. Think about 10 years ago. If you wanted to get on the internet in 2006.
Dial-up? Was it still dial-up?
I think we had DSL, but it was still kind of a process. To go on or on your phone was a huge stretch. I didn't have a smartphone yet, but if I wanted to go on the internet on this phone.
A dumb phone, yeah.
It took a while. You know, if I was doing the internet, I went home, I sat on a computer, I went to a library at school, I got a laptop, I had to make sure I was at school, and I got to sit down and use a computer. Now it's just like I have the power of the world, or all the information known to humankind in my pocket, in my hand, and I can access it at any time. And for someone who's never had a voice, now you just have the same level of a podium or a soapbox that you can stand on and project your voice at any volumes to anybody, anywhere in the world, and they can hear you, they can listen with you and connect to you. So, like anything, us human beings, we get something in excess. We push it to the extreme. We push it to the zenith until we finally just get knocked down somewhere. Someone just comes in with a machete, hits us in the Achilles. It's like, oh, okay. Your ego just gets shot. It gets demoralized.
You're taking it a step further.
And it's like, okay. I was being an asshole. I was being a dumbass. I wasn't looking at something from a completely different perspective or standpoint. Okay, let me come back down to the middle. Say, okay, I can see why some people might say this. I understand why this person feels this way, and they're going to talk like that. I was once there. But if we don't learn from our mistakes, and if we don't, you know, actually take ourselves to those levels, those crazy levels, we need some crazy people sometimes in order to vocalize where another person
says, some mishaps.
Yes, he says, oh man, I don't want to do that, or I don't want to be that way. At the same time, that person will never learn unless they took it, they went there, and they experienced that moment, say, oh shit, I don't ever want to be like that again, or, you know, I need more people like me in order to get something like this done.
It's very well said.
Thank you, sir. Yes. Thank you.
Take a bow, take a leap.
I have to stand up for that.
Don't take your phone out and start messaging people on Facebook. That's what we don't want to do.
Dude, we're so connected. I notice it sometimes. I'm writing on my blog, or I'm doing some kind of work I got to do for the podcast, or I'm building the different social media pages for this, or I'm reaching out to people, I'm connecting with other podcasters, and I'll just like stand up and like go start washing dishes, like, or I get on the phone. Okay, someone sent me an email, and before I even get to the email, I'm jumping on this application, I'm jumping on this, and it'll take me like 2 to 5 minutes, like, holy shit, I just got sucked into Facebook.
Yeah, I just got trapped.
Damn it!
So, when I was growing up, I think maybe the thing I was most interested in all through elementary school, you know, kids are sitting in class, I'm reading books, they're paying attention, I'm reading books, and I would always want to know what other people are thinking. Like, what is going through this person's brain? And I used to imagine or daydream that I could create a little device and I could go inside someone's head and know what the hell they're thinking so that we could accomplish more as a people, right? And lo and behold, here we are today, and I'd say that who you are every day when you walk outside and you talk to your neighbor is you have an outside perspective. And this new social, you know, the social media and Facebook and Twitter has allowed you to share your inner thought. The things people are scared to say in front of other human beings, they're not scared to type. They're not scared to write.
They have an egg face. Right?
They're not scared to get trolled by something. Yes, but don't not talk about egg faces. So I'll take my huevos rancheros, please. So these people, so now almost this is me, that realization as a kid coming true. People's inner thoughts are now actually being shared. They're being shared on Facebook and they're being shared on Twitter and other social media and other aspects of their life. So now you've got almost a deviation of personality. You've got your outside personality and you've got your inside personality. I think that is actually pretty cool.
No, it's...
I'm also realizing maybe some people's thoughts, maybe we should keep those ones trapped.
But or we're just getting to a point where there's going to be no more privacy. Like you said, the amount of information that people are willing to share or that they want to share is a lot more. And there's really no a lot more of less vacuums or filters on what people say. I mean, granted, you had your old people, you know, you're going to a family dinners. Jesus, holy shit, grandma, you know, or now it's like mom or dad, like, listen, chill out. You can say it. Listen, I'm all for free speech. I'm all for
dude, let the racist comments flow.
I'm all for the anarchy and the openness. But listen, if we're going to be sitting down together, you know, people are going to say, you know, I'm affiliated with you, you know? I came from you, you know?
Tweet it. The grandmas need their own network where they can tweet racist things and no one's going to say anything in the news or
but
media.
But that's the thing. There is nothing like that anymore. Well, I mean, look at Hillary Clinton.
We might have just came up with the best new idea.
The woman.
Racist on grandma.
Racist grandma. I like that. With the lady on top of the world, who's going to be the next president? Probably she's going to be voted the next president. Her emails got hacked and all her information's out there and... Where's the privacy there? Everybody's upset. They're upset that, again, they're acting surprised. Human beings are trying to act surprised and crazy, saying, oh, I can't believe this woman would say that. I can't believe this woman would do that. The same thing goes with Donald Trump. I have plenty of friends who I've hung out with, and I've heard just like, oh, man, the things I would do. Just have her. I just want to rape her. Or completely joking, just saying like, oh, man, I just want her to come over here. I just want to throw her on my face. I want to put her flavor sit on my face all night long. It's like, yeah, I don't care. I don't act surprised when another human being is going to say it, but it comes down to the disconnect that we have when we put a title on somebody with a name and we say, okay, you're a politician now,
you
or you're a police officer now. We don't expect you to go and shoot unarmed black kids or anybody in general. We expect you not to do that because you're a police officer. We don't look at you as a human being anymore. It's almost a dehumanization we've done to people that we put in certain powers, and we all want to act surprised when they do something crazy ridiculous, like Hillary Clinton, this woman who's obviously her and her husband are obsessed with power. They are just drawn to the power. They want to.
Bill's obsessed with power. It seems like Hillary's obsessed with power.
Dude, he is
Bill
just
is enjoying the shit out of his life.
Dick slinging, power hungry, helicoptering. Just teabagging.
I would have loved to see him in the Wild West back in the day.
Look at
the way he is the Wild West of politics.
He would have been like,
we could call it the Wild Left, I guess.
He would have been like, that was a good pun, sir. He would have been like the number one sheriff for some like old town in Arizona or New Mexico.
Him. Yeah,
you'd want that, or a good U.S. Marshal.
What state is he? What state?
He's
is Missouri,
Arkansas. But anyways, and the same can be said with Donald Trump. Just like saying, okay, I can't believe this gentleman would say that. Why, again, are people so mad and so upset that I can't believe that? This guy's been saying ridiculous stuff forever. Since he's been around, since he's been alive, he's been a prolific figure. He says the most ridiculous thing, an out there thing. Like, well, I can't believe this person would be. This person could be our president. And it's like, I'm not worried about what this person's going to say or how they're going to act or treat themselves. That's for them and for people to judge them upon, saying, we don't want this person in our society. We don't want to associate ourselves with this person. I'm more concerned and worried about constitutional rights. Dan Carlin on his other podcast, Common Sense, talking about geopolitics, political current events, and politics. And he's more concerned. He went over the point of how since the 1970s, when our constitutional amendments were actually kind of re-ratified and a little bolstered up, they've kind of been trampled and thrown out the door. You want to look at the Fourth Amendment?
Should we rewrite them?
That's a question I can't afford, sir. I can't, I don't know the answer to that one.
You're going to have to call up my buddy Tom Jefferson.
Well, he would have a whole completely different opinion than all the other founding fathers. Mm-hmm. They all have their squabbles. But if Donald Trump were to be elected, and let's say in the first 10 days he wants to make an example of North Korea, and he wants to drop a nuclear bomb off the coast of North Korea as a threat and a warning, there's nothing in there to say like Congress would have to vote and give him the approval in order to do that. He could technically, on his own whim, go and do that. Now, are you worried about him talking about vaginas and theoretically or figuratively, excuse me, grabbing a woman by her vagina, or this guy willing to go drop a nuclear weapon on a country that is completely out there and out of control? And the same goes for someone like Hillary Clinton. Okay, people talk about Benghazi and the emails. This woman, she just doesn't care. But like, look over history and look at the people who wanted to be president, who wanted to be a ruler, who wanted to be a leader, who wanted to be power. They were all either
They killed a lot of people along the way. Murderers. Genghis Khan killed 75 million. That's where
he
started.
He impregnated millions, I wouldn't say millions, but almost a thousand, tens of thousands, a hundred, maybe 100,000 women.
Was it
10% of the population of Asia?
Well, I think they say one in every 200 people in the world
carries the same gene. Or some kind of relation.
From his line.
From his lineage.
It's
insane.
Test the genetic.
I
hope I am.
I'm looking more for Attila, actually, but I think Attila definitely offspring.
You know, as long as I came from some superstar sap truculent.
I want to be a Hun so bad.
Yeah.
Barbarians, that's my
Vikings.
Favorite time in history. It wasn't that much of a dark age in Europe. But just, I mean, see them out.
Why was it all the Northerners that were such savages? What, the cold winter really made them big and angry?
It's still debated, like, how they really...
Oh, they're not going to come take us over. We live in ice. Might as well go take them over.
Yeah, the same can be said with, like, people in North Korea today. Like, there's no resources in North Korea. There's no reason why we want to go attack them or start a war and saying, oh, listen, we're going to give these people freedom. Like, that's the most repressed place on the planet... planet Earth today, but you don't see us. You know, we're talking about we need to give them freedom or give them rights. This is the place that we need freedom and free speech more than any other place in the world. So why aren't we going in there and fighting? Well, because there's no resources. We're talking again about economics and, you know, finding a monetary value in order to go start a war with a place that has, what, a million plus person army and apparently nuclear weapons now.
So... There's a Tim Ferriss podcast. It's number 139. It's called Meet Scorpion, the real life Santa Claus with an IQ of 197. And Scorpion is interesting story. Irish dude grew up.
Excuse me, real quick. Water's in the sink.
Water's in the sink. Or we have a nice bottle of some keto friendly charged particle water that costs an extra $1.27.
I'll throw that. You can think about Santa Claus.
So excuse my train of thought. So Scorpion is this guy with a 197 IQ that here I am qualifying him. Look, he works he has a business in which they basically do anything. If you can fund it, he'll do it. And most of his projects are billion-dollar projects in which he's solving billion-dollar issues. So I'd say most of his projects are funded by governments, U.S. government, foreign government. And there was an important question asked on that podcast, beside it being such a great podcast. And it was about, well, if you have such liberal beliefs, such thoughts, how do you feel about the U.S. as a superpower? And he said, well, in all my knowledge and problem solving, I believe that it is much safer for one person to have a big stick than for everybody to have a big stick. Mm. If everybody has a big stick, then people are extremely liable to try to go and get other things from other people. If you're completely on an even level, someone's going to want more. It's human nature. But if you have one person with a big stick ruling everyone else with small sticks, then they're basically going to make sure... okay, none of these other people can use their stick or else they're going to get the shit kicked out of them. My big stick is going to create peace. So he thinks that one superpower is the greatest thing that's happened to Earth, the fact that the U.S. came to that superpower instead of a country like North Korea. Can you imagine if North Korea was the big stick? That's like Genghis Khan. He'd just be going after everybody left and right. Colonialism. The Western way is actually what has created peace in my mind. Our beliefs and our thoughts are for peace. So it's something that, you know, a lot of people don't really believe or agree with, but I happen to agree.
No, it is, because I mean, you look at a country like Russia, you know, the place that has even more nuclear weapons than us right now.
The moment he got power, he went after Ukraine.
But think about it. Do you see any innovation? Do you see Russian cars being driven anywhere else in the world? Even if you go to China, who is much more of an ally with Russia, I'd say we are, even though we've got $1 trillion. Was it $1 trillion or a few billion they gave us in the 2008?
The banking crisis?
Yeah. Something billion. They gave us 7 to 9 billion. But you know what's number one car sold in China, or one of? It's a Ford. It's not a Mozgov missile. There's no Russian cars. There's no, I mean, besides space travel, they do a pretty good job getting to space. They did beat us to space. But
I mean,
there's no innovation coming out. It's a cold, desolate place. I mean, there's some pretty tough, hard-nosed savages. I don't know if you've seen some of the videos of some of these Russians climbing buildings and just like being jumping from building to building, these parkours. Or the Street Fighters. They just go out and just go fight each other.
Cranes and
well, dude, my stomach drops.
The last country, capitalism kind of evolved in the West world, and it's been kind of the foundation for innovation. And Russia was one of the last agrarian societies, gift-giving societies. And so that they don't have a foundation for capitalism. That's not kind of how they function. And that's one of the reasons you see such a large country with such, you know, they are smart people. They're intelligent. They're powerful. They just aren't focused on capitalism and consumerism. And it's not a driving factor for their economy.
They definitely relate a lot better with a strong man theory, that they need one big strong man to rule that country. And I think that, I mean,
that's the whole idea. They fought that for, I mean, when Western Europe, you know, came into democracy, they fought against democracy. They literally were strong man, one man in power, run shit. They were the last Europe to kind of fade into the other direction. Because they're kind of Asia.
And I mean, then you look at the internet, though. But the internet broke people out. When they could finally see, like, holy shit, this is supposed to be communism over here? But look at these fucking people on TV in America. They got fucking nice cars. They got McDonald's. Like, hold on. Let's rethink all this shit. Let's find a different route to go down, because we're missing out on a lot. All these people we told are our enemies. Again, who does that come down to? That comes down to a failure of government. It comes down to a failure of our leaders. And again, there goes that disconnect with people with different titles. You know, we expect certain people that we elect and put into power to do the right thing, and then we're surprised and we act so, like, it's so unexpected. Like, oh my God, I can't believe this leader could have done this. But at the same time, they are fucking the system up. I even had an interesting talk with somebody. Are doctors and the whole medical practice and medical system failing us? Because look at, I was talking with our buddy, Dr. Money P, and look at diet. Look at all the benefits of not having a sedentary lifestyle, of eating the right things. And when you go to a doctor, you go to get treatment, or the things that they're taught, they're not taught things like nutrition and health. Or nutritional health. So when you go in, you're not going in to get something cured. You're going to get it fixed. They're taught to fix something, not to cure something. So what am I going in for? That would just seem, again, if we're talking economics or marketing, this is something to keep a very reoccurring factor. This is to get the most money out of the consumer that we would have coming in. So it's a whole complete failure.
It's got us this far. It's extremely beneficial because it's got us to this
point. No, I'm not knocking medicine in general. You have vaccines,
We're at the point of a revolution, right? We've made amazing progress up until this point in history, and now that we have the information age and we understand where we're at right now with what you're describing here, the medical community, it's time for us to evolve even further. It's time for us to transition into something else. We recognize it. Let's make it happen.
It's like we were talking about with the soapbox and the person on the soapbox. Someone going to a certain extent, it's been good, everything's great. Well, then some point in some time, you can't keep that constant rate of we're talking about the medical industry. At some point, the innovation is going to catch up with, remember we had spoken about this, when you can't outgrow with innovation, or innovation's not relatable or comparable to the growth. And once that happens, it's like how us as a human species have always been able to innovate to get out of certain pickles and messes, whether it's pollutants in your environment or destruction of our ecosystems. And you look at it with climate change.
That's one of the arguments, one of the outside arguments that I happen to agree with for climate change is that, okay, so let's say they say climate change is 2050, things are going to be really bad, up 2 degrees, whatever it is, it's actually worse than that. There's an argument that says that, okay, by that time our technology will be so great that we have an unforeseeable solution. So even though we are making things really bad and it would be better to solve that problem right now, by the time things get very bad, we will have been smart enough to create a solution. So it's a valid argument. It's not the best solution, but it's a valid argument. And we are driven by innovation, which is driven by capitalism, which is driven by consumerism, which is driven by the West. Had to throw that one in there.
Hashtag West.
Hashtag West. I try not to be ethnocentric, but there are some things that are completely, that are driven because of the West, because of Western ideology and vision. And as much as I like to let cultures believe in their own thoughts and let them have their own way of life, their own views, right? There's no point I lost my train of thought here.
That's what it's about. Don't worry.
There's no point. So someone from India or Africa often going to haggle price with you. There's no point in trying to do it any other way with them. You need to let them haggle the price because that's what their culture taught them. There's no point in making fun of them for haggling price. That's what their culture believes in. So that's how they're going to approach a certain situation.
Well, you know that with traveling. I mean, anytime you go outside the U.S., I mean, besides Western Europe, I mean, you're going to haggle for something. You know that everything is negotiable. And nothing
is
the price.
Built into their system, their core.
I know the same thing. Whenever I'm outside the U.S., it's like, when I first traveled, I thought like, oh no, I'm taking advantage of these people. But no, this is it. This is how that society, that culture, that marketplace, that's how it works. You are going to have them negotiate. Because if not, the price is going to jump 200, 300% on you. And if you are knowledgeable of what you're buying or that it is negotiable, and that what you want to pay, what you want to pay. That's where you have to go into looking at those things. You have a set price, you have a range of what you're willing to pay for, what you want to pay for, and try and negotiate and talk about that. But that also sets up a form of communication and intimacy that you're actually going to develop a relationship with this person you're going to buy from. I mean, hopefully it's not oh yes, my friend, come, sit, drink some tea, my friend. Here, look at these rugs, these are the best rugs in the world. Listen, but my friend, what about my children? What about them? Who is going to feed them? You must feed them.
And you're right. And I think that that's a great way of doing things. And I think I don't want to bother from someone from doing things that they've done for thousands of years. Where I do differ is I do think that the Western way of selling things is more progressive. And so the way things get done over here is what drives innovation. Like, to take it back to an original point, that's what drives innovation.
So competition.
Competition drives innovation. The singular pricing helps, created by marketing, which is a product of capitalism, is driving the extreme progression you get in the West world. So those countries, while I'm completely happy and I don't ever want to bother their way of life and tell them that they need to do it another way, but they are not competing with us with the Western-driven products, with the Western-driven marketing, with the Western-driven way of doing economics. And what's funny is the way that they are catching up, at least in my opinion, is they're catching up because the Western world is, because of the information age, things are getting to them from the Western world. Mm-hmm. So what's happening is Western companies are getting over there, Western entertainment, Western. And so those are the driving factors behind...
Even teachers. I mean, I was just Western over there. Teachers, yeah. I was just over there. Whether it's, you know, talk about basketball being taught or learned, I mean, they brought somebody, whether it's someone who's knowledgeable in the field, to come over there in Kuwait and train and teach people thinking about basketball.
I think John Maynard Keyes beat Marx, and we settled that debate here. Sorry, Marx. Sorry, Carl.
Crazy Carl.
Crazy Carl.
He's not hot anymore.
Dude, good thing he didn't have to stay alive to see him lose that battle.
Who is John Maynard Keyes, by the way?
So he's an economics, he's Keynesian economics, which is
Keynesian.
I'm not going to get into a deep scientific economics.
But what are the Keynesian?
Keynesian economics are I'll give you an internet definition of Keynesian economics.
Define it for me. And for the people out there.
Keynesian.
Something we all want to be able to afford, something we all want to know. Keynesian economics, that's a good one. It's a new one.
So, Investopedia, an economic theory of total spending in the economy and its effects on output and inflation. Keynesian economics was developed by the British economist John Maynard Keynes during the 30s in an attempt to understand the Great Depression. He advocated increased government expenditures and lower taxes to stimulate demand and pull the global economy out of depression. Subsequently, so I would say that this would be the important part. The term Keynesian economics was used to refer to the concept that optimal economic performance could be achieved and economic slumps prevented by influencing aggregate demand through activist stabilization and economic intervention policies by the government. Keynesian economics is considered to be on the demand side theory of focuses. I guess kind of...
What would Marxism and what would socialism be based off of? Sharing?
A sharing economy.
And that everybody being equal and pulling their own weight and dispersing all the goods. But then again, you don't get that competition. You don't get that innovation or people competing.
Which is the driving, which is...
But then you also get a lack of sex, because I mean, you look at sex just being such a huge factor. Like, I want to pull in the most resources because that is, on an evolutionary level, is going to make me more attractive as a mate in order to bring in more of the opposite sex or the same sex nowadays.
So that's a very good, point. No, so in a shared economy, you would say that, okay, if this is a shared economy, then what is the driving force for sex? It would still, I'm guessing, we're all the same evolved species. So although we're different cultural values, as we stated earlier, I'm guessing that sex would be kind of driven by still who has the most power, and who has the most power. That could be leaders, community leaders. It could be,
people who are inadvertently trying to hoard the resources.
People.
comes down to evolutionary level
like
again.
Capitalist. It's still somewhat capitalistic if you're hoarding resources. So let's say let's give a hypothetical world in a vacuum where everyone has the exact same amount, and then there's a power structure. So every person does their job, and there's a power structure. Maybe some job is considered better than the other, and the government gave it to you, right? Maybe you're a warrior compared to someone who works in a factory. Maybe the warrior is actually the person who is viewed as a cooler job to society, and so that person is probably more likely to have sex from a fitness point of view. The point being is that these things are driven by what? Factors that aren't influenced by GDP, by growth. These factors in a capitalistic world are who gets to have sex with the hot girls? Well, it's the person who has the most musical talent, who has output of quality music, Drake. You have person who has an import job that's bringing in tons of goods and makes $100 million.
Security.
Right? Owns football players, people who are on TV, entertainment. Someone who owns a security company that saves people.
I'm just saying it's you are secure with resources. You are secure, whether that's food, money. You don't have to put your time. And we go back to agriculture 6,000, 7,000 years ago. We don't have to put all that time in focusing on where those things, the general little thing, the building blocks that's going to keep us alive and keep us going. We don't need those or worry about those, that we have all this time now to go off and explore all the different amazing things it is to be a human on planet Earth. And that's where you get all those things that also play back in to you being able to secure amount of resources, being a singer, a rapper, a politician, or being a scientist. Those different things are going to help you develop, and that all comes from having a security of food sources, of shelter, and not having to worry about those small general things right there.
So when you are able to get those, the security of food sources, and when you're able to provide output and value to society the same way Drake puts out music, those are the people who are driven for sex. So what drives those things? Well, the driving factor would be hard work so that you can make music better than the other people, so that other people know what it is.
Education. I got to find out how to be the best.
Education is it becomes a driving factor. Another driving factor is, you said school. So all those things create a totality. And what's the result? In my mind, the extrapolated, like, similar meaning you get. So if you could pull out one similarity from each of those things, I would pull out competition. I would say competition is driving those things. To be better is creating, to have competition versus the other person is creating better music, it creates a better society, and that stimulates innovation. So that's why the West is stimulated by those things, and completely always on an up,
exponential
upward trend.
Growth. Exponential,
yeah, it's always on exponential growth. And in shared economies, you're not getting to that level because you don't have those things. I mean, this is like a basic foundation.
Or
for
it's just not
those two.
It's not
arguments.
Meant for you to get to an exponential growth level. You're supposed to stay at that gradual, consistent baseline level. But yo, what's it called? I gotta take off. I gotta get out of here. I gotta go to this training session.
Lovely.
Dude, I'm glad we got the bus back. Dude. We got the bus. We got a double.
Air handshake over there.
Air handshake?
Yeah. Oh, so on our next show, we are going to be having a wonderful guest, the Wes Byram, ex Auburn football player who kicked the game-winning kick.
Is that place kicker or is that just
he
kicker?
He is a place kicker. So he's kicked the game-winning national championship in oh man, it's been a while. I guess it's 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
And now he is studying to become a lawyer, so we're going to get to transverse a few different topics and
dissect what it just means to be Wes Bynum. We know him, and he's a great friend, real close friend with Daniel, and just a great all-around individual human being. So we want to know what it takes to be the best. And Wes is going to – hopefully we ask the right questions.
Hopefully he can afford them.
We're having a few contests, actually. Anybody who comments and writes a review on iTunes and emails us a picture at onthebuspodcast.com will receive an On the Bus Podcast t-shirt. We'll be in contact. I'll get your mailing address, and I will send you an On the Bus Podcast with your choice of size. So I need all of you to get out there. All you subscribers, thank you for subscribing. But now, I need you guys to write a review, write a comment. All of it is appreciated. So, everybody, have a great rest of your day. The bus is out. And remember, you're either on the bus or off the bus. Cheers, folks.
For those who...